welcome to the Slowpokes podcast. We play great games just a little bit late. I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nikolaitis.
I think we settled on Slowpoke X.
Yes.
Slowpoke asterisk. There's a wild card in there.
Yeah. But if I could get a name, though, for,
you know. Oh, my name is James. Yes. James Dominguez.
Thank you for coming, James. David couldn't be here because he was doing his top secret job, which is top secret. But could you tell me just a little bit about yourself?
Oh, probably not. I think there's just too much.
That's great.
I've been a journalist. I am currently working in video game PR. Yep. I do radio. I've done podcasting. I do lots of stuff.
You are where I want to be in about 3 years, maybe. It should take that long for me to get there.
Dude, raise your sights.
Oh, okay, I'll angle up higher then, I guess. Oh, no, now I don't know about my own opinions, whether they're high or low. But I've brought you in here from your far more professional world into my lounge room.
In my far more professional world today, I was playing Witcher 3 while eating nachos. That's my professional world.
Oh, cool. We work at the same level then. I might have secretly been playing Universal Paperclips, but no one can prove it, Your Honor. But we're not here to talk about ourselves too much, only the right amount for an entertaining podcast.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about Breath of the Wild.
The Legend of Zelda.
Breath of the Wild. The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
People on the internet lied to me. Someone told me that Zelda was the boy.
Oh.
And it turned out it wasn't.
I know it's probably like a joke, but I genuinely thought that Zelda was actually the boy, like for years. I never grew up with all the classic games consoles, like the NES. Is that what Zelda came out on first?
Yeah, it would have been.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, cool, great. I do know a fact. There we go. One fact in the show already. We are nailing it.
It was just this thing. There was this running joke about 6 months ago where people on the internet were deliberately trolling angry fanboys by propagating the Zelda was the boy hashtag. And I don't know what that was about, but it was actually kind of funny in a not funny, or not funny in a funny way. It was a zen form of funny. It was quantum funny.
If you're going to take geekery and weaponize it, that's a perfect way to ignite fires onto fanboys as they go, no, you don't know anything about my video games I love.
Yeah, it was funny how unfunny it was. You know, that kind of quantum thing. Yeah.
Who knows what dimension it exists in? All we know is we giggle when we see it.
Yeah. So I did get onto Breath of the Wild a little late. I didn't own a Switch until, what was it, about September, October last year. And then I jumped onto Mario first. Oh. That wasn't an intended pun, by the way. I jumped onto Mario. Boing, boing.
Oh, and then we will dub in the Mario boing sound now.
Ba-ding.
There. You jumped on for Mario.
Yeah, and yeah, so I got through that and then I went, it's time for some Zelda. Mm-hmm. And then played approximately 14,000 hours of Breath of the Wild.
Which I think is standard for most people.
There's a lot of game there. There is a lot of game. For a long time, we had that argument where it's like, oh, this game was too short. It's like when Call of Duty came out and it was like, oh, the campaign was only 8 hours long. We're very angry. And then it's like, yeah, there may have been some times in Zelda where I was like, oh, God, I wish this was fucking 8 hours. Yeah. this is going on a little long.
I haven't actually told you one of the key things about the show, which is that we start with our expectations before and after, which you kind of gotten into a little bit. So before I played Zelda Breath of the Wild, I expected it to be this forever story that would just endlessly go on. And I also expected to be continually mad about weapons breaking. Those are basically the two things. And also,
so you nailed it pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much nailed it. Except I didn't realize how handsome the Zora Prince is.
Yeah.
His name escapes me.
Sexy fish dude, yeah.
Because he is so dreamy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I must admit, I was led to believe that it would be pretty amazing because when it first came out and I was like, I'm not getting a Switch just yet because as far as finances go, that's just not a practical thing for me to do right now.
I'm an adult. I will wait until it's cheaper, etc.
I ended up getting one with my frequent flyer points.
Oh!
So I basically paid for postage. That's how much I paid for my Switch because I was like, I'm going to save some cash on this.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
I'd pay postage on a Switch. It was free for me.
But yeah, people were saying when it first came out, they were literally saying, this is not only the best Switch game, it's not only the best Zelda game, this may be the best game that has ever been released. And to those people, I say, have you ever played another fucking video game?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's, you know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but parts of it are amazing.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Parts of it made me want to stab people. And
I mean, you'd be hard to find a sword, though.
Oh, yeah. It's like, okay, I'll go stab someone. Oh, and it broke. Damn it.
I'll just go bunch of trees. I'll get a branch.
So, spoilers, I have mixed feelings. They're mostly, they lean toward the positive.
That's good. That's,
yeah.
That's,
if you put the negatives and the positives on different sides of a scale, the positive side would be a little heavier.
Okay, good, good. That's nice. I don't want to go into this conversation being really miserable. although that can be fun. I actually kind of have to agree that there are some things that annoy me and things that I don't wish to admit because of how everyone talked about the game. I was like, oh, I don't want to be annoyed at that, like those losers. And then I'm like, oh no, I'm the loser.
I think it's reasonable to be annoyed about going, hey, this is a really awesome weapon. I love this weapon. I hit with it 10 times and it broke. I think that's reasonable.
All right. We're just going to just gonna talk about this right now, okay? Normally we save this stuff for the end, but is out of the gate. I think
I'm a rebel.
Yeah.
I just don't do anything.
Who needs structure or form or anything?
Stick it to the man.
Yeah.
Anti-establishment.
Exactly. So everyone.
Bacon for breakfast. No, bacon. You do have bacon for breakfast. Bacon for dessert.
Yeah, soy bacon. It's just as good.
Ice cream for breakfast. That's what we're doing. We're having ice cream for breakfast.
Soy ice cream. Anyway, it's fine. I love soy.
Food analogies break down when you're talking to a vegan.
So weapon degradation was a big thing people talked about with Breath of the Wild. A lot of people basically falling in either one of two camps. Maybe three camps. Let's go. It's fine. It adds to the gameplay. Then there was the, it's okay. I can deal with it. And then there's the, this is terrible. I can't stand it. I broke the best lance in the world, people. And I really wanted to be in the camp that was like, oh yeah, this is revolutionizing the way we play these kind of open world action games. And I gotta be honest.
It's just annoying.
It just gets, and it's not, there are moments where I can feel that beauty in the design when you're fighting someone and your weapon starts to flash and you're like, haha, I will throw it at you and do double damage. The game tells me in the menu screen every five times. But that flow of throwing a weapon or having a really strong weapon that breaks and you're like, no, I need it to kill this boss. What am I going to do? All I have is Koro leaves.
But what actually happens, what ends up happening is that you hoard all your good weapons and you spend 90% of the game fighting with okay weapons.
Yeah, I leave them in my house. They're on the wall. I'm like, this is a really cool spear I got from the fish people. I know I can get a new one when it dies, but I don't want it to break and make me feel sad because the fish people gave it to me.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to interrupt. You can get a house.
Oh, and see, this is the other thing. Oh, I'm really double downing. So, in a second, we're going to talk about the beautiful, wonderful design of this open world game and how lovely and gorgeous it is. But the other thing is, some features you might miss. For me, it was fire weapons or ice weapons alter your temperature. So if you want to go into a hot place, you can carry a cold sword and then you can go there. For some people, it's a house. You can buy a house. There's a house in like the town with the, it's the one with, it's the anime trope. There's the little girl who's actually an old lady, but she's become a little girl again. Yeah. And if that happens, then you're like, whoa, this game is made in Japan. There's a house you can buy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? This game was made in Japan? The game where when you go and try to upgrade some armor, you have to click your way through the same goddamn dialogue tree every single time. And you just, I just want to upgrade one. I've got like 40 pieces of armor to upgrade today. Can we not? No, no. Don't tell me about sets. Don't tell me about set bonuses. No, listen to me. Do not tell me about set bonuses because you've already done that. And I'd like to upgrade my armor now, please.
Okay. So I might.
I'm doing this all out of order. I'm sorry. No, I'm an agent of chaos.
Anyway, to continue our wonderful flow, the thing that annoys me is how the bloody cooking works. It's beautiful the way the animation, that you put the, hold the items, you go over to the cooking pot and you pour them in and there's a nice cute song that plays and then they bounce and you go, hey, I made a super duper steak, but I want to make 20 steaks. So I would sit down on my lunch break at work and just make 20 steaks.
There are no, I don't think there are any deadly flaws in the whole game. What there is, it's just like nobody thought about usability. Nobody thought about user experience. There are just all these little niggling things like I don't want to click through this dialogue every time I do this thing that I'm going to do a lot.
Mm.
Or I don't want to watch that asshole dance every time I want to expand my inventory. It's like, I know you love dancing, but do it on your own time. Yep. I'm a busy, pointy-eared blonde guy. Yep. I've got many things to do. Fuck off.
Listen, mate.
Just
I've got,
expand my inventory and fuck off.
I'll give you double the amount of Korok seeds if you can just skip this and you can just magically enhance my inventory. Like, I don't know how this works. It's literally magic. Why are you doing this to me? You have nobody else in your life. Are you a lone magical dancing man?
What exactly happens there? Like, while he's dancing, does one of the Koroks come up behind you and, like, sew extra pockets into your clothing invisibly while you're not looking?
I don't know what's weirder. A Korok surreptitiously slowing an extra pocket onto your bag, which doesn't exist, by the way, or your magical dimensional pocket that you just have when you reach behind you, like in most video games, just grows. The dark void. In another reality, another world is snuffed out to make room for your trousers.
I just love that 25 years ago that got lampshaded. Back in the days of Sierra point-and-click adventure games,
yep.
I think it's Space Quest 3 or Space Quest 4, one of those early in the game, you pick up a ladder.
Yeah.
And it, like, the text comes up and says, you take the ladder and stuff it in your pocket. And then and then a dialogue box pops up that just says, ow. 25 years later, though, we're still doing the infinite pockets, and that's okay because they're video games.
Yeah, and I think it's about balancing that kind of stuff, which I don't think it does perfectly all the time, but then it kind of does in other instances. Like, the way they combat is relatively simple but can be applied in different ways, and that's what makes it interesting. Different enemies have different reacts and stuff like that. To me, I think a lot of the design went into the world they built in front of you. When I started Breath of the Wild and Zelda... I did it. Link. I know what...
Because hashtag Zelda is the boy.
Hashtag Zelda is the boy. When Link, obviously, wakes up and you start on what I like to call Tutorial Plateau, the mini version of the game, you're kind of like, oh, this is weird. I thought this game was going to be huge. And then I realized that that tutorial island was like a microcosm of the larger world. And I only realized that after I completed it, and I was really impressed by that idea, how they built a mini version with all the rules of the larger world, and they just took you through it in a kind of pretty straightforward way, basically told you what to do, and then they were like, oh, here's the full world now, just fucking deal with it, just go, you're fine, go find some people, whatever, and that's it.
We've given you a quest. If you follow the quest, you'll find some stuff. If you don't, that's fine too. I mean, Princess Zelda, she's on the absolute last ounce of her energy and she could die and the world will be plunged into darkness at any moment. But don't worry about it. Go hang gliding.
That's so true, right?
Go catch some fish. Don't use a fishing rod. No, jump in and swim after the fuckers. Go on.
That's the best way to catch fish. I put on my Zoro clothes and I just swim around and then swim up waterfalls and just catch fish with my teeth. Link is just... diving in and out of the ocean, catching fish.
So I have to... You can stick this anywhere. stick this anywhere in the show. But this is possibly my favourite thing about the whole game.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a weird thing to be my favourite thing about the whole game. But it really is. Canonically, all of those insects and fish and lizards...
I don't like where this is going.
That Link's pockets are full of.
Like, infinitely full of.
They are canonically alive. They're all squirming and hopping around in his pockets.
Oh, that's really weird. Why did you say that?
Here's the thing.
My pocket's full of insects.
Yeah. Alive insects and lizards and beetle. They're all alive. See, I thought I'd be really clever one day. So Beetle, the merchant who's very excited about beetles.
And also has a backpack like a beetle and walks around selling insects.
He sold me a type of beetle that I'd never seen before.
Cool.
I bought one off him and I was like, cool, I know what I'll do. I'll drop it on the floor. I'll take a photo of it.
So then you can find it.
And then I can track it with the Sheikah Slate. Fucker flew away, didn't it? my 400 coin beetle flew away. So canonically, all of them are alive. Now, I haven't tested it with a fish, but I bet if you dropped a fish, it would swim away if you dropped it into water. Actually, maybe not. I don't know. I have to test it with the fish.
Yeah.
I want to know.
And that's a really interesting thing about the game is how it has these real world kind of dynamical like things. Like if you put an insect out, it just fucks off. If you set fire to something, it creates an updraft. If you're wearing a metal sword and a metal suit of armor and a metal shield and there's a thunderstorm, you get struck by lightning.
Yeah. Oh, God. Number of times where it's like, ah, here's a big fight that I want to do. I want to kill this big monster and a thunderstorm just started. I hate you so much.
But that was the side of the combat that I found super interesting because it was like listen, man, it's a thunderstorm. What do you want me to do? I'm just the game. Thunderstorms are a thing that exists here. You better have something in your pockets to deal with this. Otherwise, you're just going to be running around throwing magical bombs.
You know what's really fun? When you encounter one of the sentinels, is that what they're called? The ancient robot things?
Oh, I don't know. We don't have to be real nerds here.
Yeah. Drop a sword on the ground near one of them when there's a thunderstorm and then, like, hide. And it's pretty hilarious.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
Yeah, the lightning does them a lot of damage if they happen to be standing next to it. Yeah, I managed to chuck one, so it was basically in the dirt right underneath it, and a lightning bolt hit it and pretty much one-shotted it.
Oh, that's amazing. I can just... Also, because the lightning has a really satisfying, like, crack and effect, and just, like, the way... And the way those things react to when you hit them with something really big is they'll go limp and all their legs and stuff move all around the place, and then they explode.
Yeah. Did you know that you can deflect their beams with your shield?
No.
Nah, that's one of the things. I found that out on the internet because the game didn't tell me.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, if you time it just right, yeah, you can smack it back and hit them in the face with their own lasers.
Welcome to the segment of the podcast where we talk about things we didn't realize until halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Do you know that you can shoot them in the eye and it just stuns them?
Yeah.
Do you know that when I discovered that, they became the easiest enemies to fight?
Yeah. Well, see, it was the deflecting the lasers thing that really changed it for me, because I was going, okay, hit him in the eye, they're stunned. And then I'll just go through like three weapons, killing this thing, just smashing all my weapons against it, and it finally died. There we go.
Yeah.
Then you go, oh, wait a minute, I could deflect its laser and kill it in two shots and never wear out my weapons at all.
Do you know you can cut its legs off?
Yes.
That
is one of the most satisfying things I've ever done in a game. When I got the Master Sword and I'm running around just going, and here it comes, it's coming for me, and whoop, off goes a leg, whoop, off goes a leg, and just run around and go, yep, what are you going to do now, motherfucker?
It's hard for me to replicate the actual joy I felt when I first cut off one of their legs, because I should not have been fighting it because I did not have the Master Sword. In fact, I think I had like Knight Swords, like the early weapons that start the game. And I cut its legs off and it goes, whoa! And it kind of freaks out a little when you do it. And I was like, oh my God, fuck you. Yeah.
It doesn't really have a face, but you just see it going, what the hell? It's like, seriously, that is not cool. I know I was trying to shoot you and murder you, but that is not cool.
The way it wiggles its head backwards and forwards when you go,
you realize I've been buried in the earth for 10,000 years. I pop up and you chop one of my legs off. How do you think that makes me feel?
That's what you get for signing with Ganon, you robot.
Not my fault.
No, it isn't.
I was reprogrammed.
I guess you were. Let's not. Hopefully.
So we've slipped into a role play here. Yeah. So how did it feel when I shot my laser at you?
I felt threatened. I felt more threatened.
Excellent use of I statements there. When you shoot a laser at me, I feel shot at.
So this is the second thing. One, I don't know how to use words. And two, I don't really listen to anything. I got really bad hearing in my left ear and my right ear.
And my nose, funnily enough.
Yeah, I don't know how it hears, but I can get sound through it, and sometimes the radio. So you have to excuse me for messing up your beautiful roleplay. Oh, God, we are all over the place. Okay, it's cool. I got notes right here.
This is going to be fun to edit. I'm a bad person.
That's fine. I'm the one who brought you here, so we're both equally at fault.
So what did you want to talk about now?
The thing that kind of really pulls me into Zelda is how fucking gorgeous the world looks. From walking through a forest to scaling a mountain, it's like they just built every bit of it to be climbed and explored. And there was never a point when I summited a mountain and I looked around that I felt sad about what I'd done.
Hmm.
Even if it was just like more forest, like even the most mundane landscapes had a sense of beauty that I take with me as I go through the world. Makes me want to climb hills in real life.
Almost. No, not really.
No, I can do it from my computer. It's way nicer that way. I didn't know you could climb any surface. And that was the part where I fell in love with Zelda. Because I get mad at games that kind of... They make you feel hampered because you're like a weird block that moves through the world. Like, you're a rectangle, basically. That's how the game sometimes treats your character when you play video games.
Yeah, it's that great thing. Oh, in the, like, early 2000s, there was this spate of, like, action role-playing-y kind of games where there was no actual jump button. Like, God of War, for example. Yeah, good old Kratos. Couldn't jump. He could murder. He could murder like hell. Wow, he was good at murder.
He could murder up.
But jumping was beyond him. And the number of times in God of War where you just sort of go, oh, there's a knee-high wall. I cannot go any further because that knee-high wall is Yeah, that's insurmountable. I'll just go and kill a god over here, but I'm not going to walk over that knee-high wall. Yeah, no knee-high walls in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Or if there are, you can just hop over them. All good.
Hop over them, walk on them, climb up them, then jump off.
Hit them with your sword, break your sword.
Break your sword. Throw your sword at a wall, wonder why you did that. Oh, God, that was the best sword I had.
Bloody boomerangs.
I think I could actually be very comfortable if this whole episode was just us going through every part of the game that was just like, wasn't that nice when you got the lizard sword or the boomerang and you threw it the first time and it goes and you catch it with the button?
Yeah, I never caught it. I kept dropping it and breaking it, so I never threw them.
Oh, it's basically what I use.
But if you actually hit an enemy with them, they break, don't they?
No, they come back to you. It's only if, I don't know. Why? Because that's not how boomerangs work. But in the game, when you throw them and you hit an enemy and there's no trees or anything around you, it'll come back to you.
Little tip for all the video game designers out there in the world. Boomerangs only come back if they miss.
Yes, that is correct.
FYI. I know that's not fun, though.
No. It would kind of ruin the fun. I mean, because you can just throw any sword or weapon or rake or broom.
Have you done any lawn mowing yet?
Lawn? Oh yeah, of course. How else do you collect fairies if you're not going to mow the lawn?
Yeah, that was me going, I need more rice and wheat for my cooking. Then it's like, where can you find rice and wheat? Okay, I'm going to mow some lawns.
I don't know how I fell in love with doing gardening with a sword, but I really did. And then the best part is when a lizard appears or something and you have like the briefest of moments to run up and catch it right before it disappears.
It's a really weird game in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
the Hyrule Lawn Mowing Simulator.
It's funny how it's like this beautiful world that feels real but is ridiculous. And everyone just lives in it and is totally fine with how ridiculous it is. You know, this is just the way it is. Every so often you find a tree full of goblins and they try and murder you. Or they throw barrels at you. Those jerks. it's totally normal for a bunch of skeletons to appear out of the ground.
But it's always one group of skeletons each night.
Oh my god, is it? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's always one.
Oh my god. And the game has a lot of things like that where it's super gamey.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like what makes me love it is they choose all the ones. I say that, but then I remember weapon degradation. I feel a bit weird. But when they make the right decision, they really make some strong decisions. And I didn't realize that I would fall in love with unlocking parts of the maps via a tower. Even though all it does is fill in your map, climbing the giant spires that you see throughout the world, because for some reason Link coming back has now made all of these towers appear.
There's some kind of causation chain there.
We'll get to the story, in air quotes, a bit later, but okay, no. You know what we'll do? We'll get to it now, because I'm in charge.
Ice cream for breakfast.
Ice cream for breakfast. Oh yeah, captain's hat on. The story just feels like it's there to facilitate exploration and encountering cool things. Someone was just like, should we have dungeons in the game? And then someone else was like, yeah, I guess we should. But can we make them giant creatures that, like, fight Ganon? And someone was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. Oh, you know, you should control them with a Sheikah Slate while you're inside of them, and that should be part of the puzzle-solving mechanic. Why would anyone build a fighting machine like this? It's full of empty dungeon rooms.
You've got to imagine, though, somebody went home early when they're just like, hey, why don't we give Link a Switch?
I'm glad you said it, because I had it written down in my personal notes, and I was like, now that's two on the nose.
And everyone just went, yeah, that's it, we're going for an early lunch.
Yeah, I was like, no, it's not a Switch. It can't be a Switch. That's ridiculous. It's just a tablet device.
It's a Switch.
And then every time you go to a place and, like, activate a map or get a new rune and it says authenticating, I'm just like, yeah, this is a video game console, isn't it? He's got attached to his hip. They give you a really interesting range of abilities too. When I play a role-playing fighting game, I expect to have a fireball and an ice blast and stuff like that. And in Zelda, they're like, no, you get two different types of bombs, one that moves and one that rolls. And, you can make ice pillars on water, and you can control things that are made of metal. Oh, and take photos. Because Snapchat's a thing.
We didn't work out how to weaponize the photos, but still.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what's really frustrating is I can't find a way to bring it up on the full screen so I can actually take it out of the game. Like, whenever I look at it, it's just kind of like inside of a window of the Sheikah slate. And I'm like, no, game, I want to take a photo with the in-game camera and then take that photo with me that is in a Sheikah slate.
It's because they've been watching the trailers for all the Switch games.
Yeah.
And they're always like in the Switch frame. Every time there's a trailer, it's like, yeah, yeah, we know. You can totally go full screen now. We understand it's a Switch game. It's cool.
Also, they did manage to put in motion controls.
Oh, yeah. With archery, yes.
You know what's actually really funny? What we're doing now is we're doing this podcast just like Zelda Breath of the Wild, where you can go wherever you want and do whatever you want, whenever you want.
You might think we're disorganized, but we are on brand.
Yeah, yeah. See, we're capturing the emotional resonance of the game right now.
Yep. Now we're going to make you sit through a dialogue tree 40 times.
Did you know that 100 years ago there was a hero? You look kind of like him. Ah, well. Anyway. Yeah. So one of the parts of the game I was really surprised with how much I enjoyed. I was like, oh, this is Zelda. There'll be lots of dungeons. And then there's lots of mini dungeons in the form of those shrines. They'll all have a different thing. Some of them are combat. Others are puzzles to solve with wind turbines or freezing things with your magical time powers. Or some of them are also moving the Switch around to move around objects in the game.
I didn't mind those. I didn't mind them.
They're fine. I played a lot of Breath of the Wild on the train. And so when you're there and you're like, I'm at this temple, I want to complete it.
Could I use the sticks, please?
Can I use the sticks?
It's got sticks on it. Can I use the sticks, please?
And the Switch is like, nah, go somewhere else that's not moving. We don't care. There's no option. Come back later.
Yeah, what I really loved, the ones that are really hard to get into, like you have to actually do a quest up above to actually get into the shrine, and you get into the shrine and it's just a set of stairs up to it, and they just no, you made it in. Yeah. We're not gonna test you anymore. You're good. You're in.
You climbed the snow mountain. You fought all the monsters. It's like you did a thing with a dragon.
And you just sort of think back in time when someone was building this shrine. How did they know that a woman was going to be passed out drunk on here, and I'd have to bring her alcohol in order to get her off it so that I could get inside? How did they know that? The Sheikah designers were amazing.
Can I tell the future? That's really weird that they did that.
And then every now and then it's like, you know, you go through this big quest and you get inside. It's like, this is going to be one of the easy ones. And oh, it's a test of strength. What the hell?
Yeah.
I did a quest already.
Yeah.
How rude. You formed my expectations and then...
I say that though. There is one that is an island. There's
a whole island. Yeah,
it's a whole island. You go there and the island's like, nah, mate, I'm going to take all your shit.
Sorry, this is Hyrule Survivor.
Yeah, you got to go fight a giant with nothing. Just a little naked Link running around in his underwear. Just
chuck some rocks at it. You'll be fine.
Yeah,
hit it with a stick.
When I first went there, I had like 5 hearts. Anything would just hit me once and Link would just fly off into the water. And I think the wonderful thing about the challenges is they're like, mate, this is too hard for you. It's okay. Come back later. Mark it on your map. You can teleport here magically.
Just try it again.
Yeah, because it's got a magical teleporting system. Why? Who cares? Thank God it's there. Surprisingly, though, the fast travel doesn't break the open world for me. I found myself fast traveling when I needed to go somewhere specific. But anytime I wanted to go in a direction, I'd just get on a horse and go that way. And, oh, I mean, I say that. Usually what would happen was I'd see a really nice mountain. I'd jump off my horse, I'd put on my climbing gear, I would climb that mountain into some kind of weird Zen moment where I can just rock climb to my heart's content.
Do you have the climbing armor set yet?
I don't. I have the shirt and the pants. Is there a
hat? Just wait until you get the hat.
Oh, my God.
It's a Southern California douchebag outfit.
I know. I love it. It Link's tooling around in like a sleeveless like shirt and short pants. And
it's like a Silicon Valley weekend outfit. Yeah. It's just like such a douchebag outfit.
That makes
me laugh so much.
I'm like aware of how daggy it is. So I wear that usually just as I'm tooling around by myself. But the second I see a person, I usually swap to something more appropriate. So when I go into a town to do a quest storyline, I'll put on Link's Royal Guard outfit, look official, because otherwise I'll just look like the weirdest stoner dude. I like to wear the fur pants with it. This is my secret. It was one of the secret things I love about Zelda, is the kind of mix and matching you can do with the different outfits. And while they might not give you a full match set.
Oh, did you know that there are set bonuses?
Yes, I did
notice. Are you aware that there are set bonuses? Did anyone ever tell you there are set bonuses?
I think the game did once.
I'll never repeat that.
Yeah. Also, I genuinely think that this game is secretly a harem anime in disguise, because there are a lot of people who are like totally into Link, but it can never be.
He is very pure of heart.
Yeah. Link, man, you gotta tell these people you're not interested. You've only got eyes for
Link,
one person.
Link, tell them. Link, say something, Link. Link, say something.
You gotta speak, Link. You gotta express yourself as a human being. You can't just talk.
No, don't just widen your big blue eyes at me. That's just making me fall in love with you more.
Oh, they're so blue, though. I was going to talk about giant camels, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah.
So
how about them giant camels?
Yeah, so while the world is full of small shrines that you might get distracted with and then talk about how sexy Link is, every so often you come across one of these divine beasts, which are the vehicles that the heroes piloted to defeat Ganon, and they're just giant animals. One's an elephant, and you're like, yeah, cool, an elephant. And one's a giant bird, and you're like, oh, a giant bird. And then another's a camel. And I'm like, what? I get that the desert people
someone,
and everything.
Someone drew the short straw on that one. It's like, am I going to get the eagle? Am I going to get the giant lizard? Yeah, giant lizard's kind of cool. Okay.
I haven't seen the giant lizard yet.
Oh, you're a camel.
Yeah.
No, I got a camel.
I mean, I secretly love the camel because, like all of them, it shoots a giant laser.
Yeah.
And, like, a camel that shoots a giant laser is amazing. And also, it has, like, a tumbler flock system inside of it. And at first, I was really worried about how you could control the divine beast with the Sheikah Slate, kind of hack it. But it was so much fun solving those divine beast puzzles.
Yeah, I had all these mixed feelings about it when I first started. Because everyone had talked it up and it was like, oh, it's the greatest game ever released and all that stuff. But then when I did the first divine beast, which I did one really early because I met the fish people and did all of that. And I just sort of, without really meaning to, I just sort of went and did all of that, all of that divine beast. And then when I actually did the divine beast, I was like, okay, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool.
Giant elephant. It's amazing.
And the fact that I've discovered, you know, the whole thing about moving the trunk, you can direct the water and that's for solving the puzzles. Then I'm like, oh, I can stand on the trunk.
Yeah.
And I can stand on the trunk while I move the trunk. And this is pretty cool.
And I love how it lets you set up the movement and then jump out of the menu and ride that giant trunk and move around the giant tumbler inside of the camel. And I haven't done the other divine shrines, so I can't tell you any references.
Yeah, but basically my favorite part of the entire game, pretty much, was the giant bird divine beast quest. Because the way that one works is you tilt it left and right, and things will, and like blocks and stuff will slide around inside.
Oh,
I'm
so excited.
You have to use your ice columns and your freezing things in place and all that sort of to effectively direct things. And there's a lot of tilting room puzzles.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Mm. It's really, really good. I mean, all the other three are all great as well, but that eagle just, that's pretty damn good.
It captured your heart, didn't it?
The big old bird.
Yeah, it just swooped down and just,
and it was piloted by a bird man. I mean, that was a lucky
That blew my mind. I was like, there's bird people in Zelda? When? Since when? I would have always played this game with those bird people. They're so cool. They're birds. They're people. They can fly and fight in the sky.
They should have kept that pattern going, though. There should have been elephant people piloting the elephant.
Yeah. It was weird that the fish people did that.
Camel people. The Gerudo, they are quite tall.
Yeah, this is true.
They're not camels, though.
No.
and there are no volcanic lava-spewing lizard people.
No. Now, you're making me wish for an alternative, almost furry-esque version of Breath of the Wild where there's like 50 different giant beasts and they're all different animals and there's like a whole race of animal people related to that animal.
And they're just like, what are you talking about? I don't look like that. You totally do. You're an elephant man. No, I'm not an elephant person. What are you talking about? I'm a biped.
Yeah,
they're quadrupeds.
You've got tusks, mate, and you've got little stubbly toes on your hands. Like, you're an elephant.
You've got a trunk and giant ears.
I'm not trying to be mean here, okay?
It's like, okay, there's a superficial resemblance, but come on. Except for the females of the race who just look like sexy women with slightly different coloured skin.
See,
they're wearing bikinis.
That's when I start to go back to the anime comparison because I'm just like, man, guys, stop that. That's a bit weird. I think the Gorons are kind of, I don't think they have like a gender thing. I think they decide what gender they are and it's a bit sort of like,
I just love that they're these big bulky guys walking around in G-strings.
Basically, all of them. A race of G-stringed giant people.
Just eating rocks.
Eating rocks. Oh, man, it'd be so cool to eat rocks to live. You know you can make rock food?
Mm.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Don't put diamonds in rock food. It doesn't do anything better.
No, and I do love the fact that it's just a completely pointless bit of world building, but the fact that they eat rocks, but they don't like gemstones.
Mm.
So they'll sell you gemstones because they don't like the taste of them.
Oh, yeah. No, we're only like boring rocks, like obsidian.
Sandstone.
There's two rocks. We named two rocks.
There you go. Sandstone. They'd be like ice cream for them.
Yeah.
It's very crumbly. It'd be like a honeycomb.
Yeah. Oh, like a golden gaytime or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, the story is this. It's a thing you can grab onto if you're feeling like you've had enough or you want some direction.
I need a bit of direction.
Yeah. Especially when you meet the Zora, that I feel like is a very long segment where they literally lead you down a path to go through that experience. That feels the most kind of like, oh, hey, here's the thing. You meet the people, you go through the quest, you do the thing. Hey, you beat a divine beast. The other ones are all a bit more loose than that.
You earn the respect of people who hate your guts because you got their princess killed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Zora really do not. There's that old man that really doesn't like you.
Yeah.
But that's because he secretly loves that old princess because, again, it's an anime.
I have to load it up and go back to it because there's an old fish dude who's like, hey, if you ever meet a couple who want to get married, please bring them to me because I haven't done a wedding in ages.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a couple together. I've got to go back and check on them and see if he's going
to
marry them.
Did you find the island, the lake where people go if they want to find their love partners?
Yeah. There's another one which is heart-shaped but with like a zigzag down the middle of it. And that's the Lake of Heartbreak. Don't go to that one.
Oh, no. That sounds so sad.
There's somebody hanging around there going, I think I might be at the wrong lake because my true love hasn't turned up.
And this is part of the way that the world is just full of little tiny natural ways to make you keep wanting to explore it. I feel like Assassin's Creed will be like, hey, we've put feathers everywhere. Go collect feathers so you're... mother can make them into an outfit for you. Okay, I also love how my game references are so eclectic and sometimes old. It's like Assassin's Creed 2.
Hey, look, I referenced a Sierra Quentin click game.
This
Come
is
on.
True. Yeah. We gotta mention Call of Duty. What's the new one? I can't even...
Something. Black Ops.
Space. Oh, something. Yeah, no.
Infinite.
Blops 3.
Black... Modern Warfare Ops.
We forgot the point of our games where it was about Americans fucking up. That's why Call of Duty 4 is the best one, because in Modern Warfare, the British fix all the problems.
Okay, this is probably going to cut out because this is a total tangent.
This whole podcast has been a tangent.
When Far Cry 5 first got announced,
yes,
and there were some very, very angry young men, because they were young men, on the internet going, oh, you know, how would people feel if we had a game where you go into places where dark-skinned people live and you shoot them? And I'm like, have you ever played Call of Duty and Battlefield?
We had a game called
Medal of Honor.
Call of Juarez. They had a modern version of that where you literally went to, like,
let's go
ghettos.
Shoot some Mexicans.
There was an achievement that was, like, related to shooting Mexicans in a level that they changed. It had a very offensive name, which I'm glad I can't remember.
Yeah, because I played... there were two of them that came out at the same time. There was, like, one of the Battlefields and one of the Call of Duties. This is a few years ago, back when I was still a video game journalist. And, and I started playing one. And it was just like, okay, I'm on level 4 now. This is another level where I'm shooting lots of black people.
Yeah, this is feeling
I'm getting really depressed by this. Yeah. So I'm going to stop this. I'm going to load up the other one. So I put away the Call of Duty and loaded up the Battlefield, or vice versa. Yeah. Who the fuck knows? one of the other. Take your pick.
Yeah,
and then I started the first level. I'm like, wow, this is really pretty. The Frostbite engine. And yeah, oh, I'm shooting dark-skinned people again. All right, well, I'll play the first. Okay, oh, we're different people now. We're in a different country.
Okay, which people am I murdering today?
God, we're shooting dark-skinned people again. And I just have to stop playing. It was like when I was playing Far Cry 3. I was like, I was so happy when I got to the second island because it was populated by, like, white mercenaries. I was like, yes!
Yeah.
White mercenaries! Fuck those white mercenaries! God. I can shoot them without guilt.
As an SJW, I can now play this game without any qualms. White people murder simulator. It's literally all we wanted. No, I do get that. It just feels weird, especially when no one mentions it. It's like, hey guys, you know, you made a game where you... It's like, what is it called? Tom Clancy, The Drug War is a Good Thing. Go do the drug war in South America. Yeah, it's Wildlands. Yeah. It's like, or Tom Clancy's Shit Christmas Simulator. The Division, where you shoot looters, that are totally not related to anything.
Lotters will be shoot on sight.
Yes. God, guys, gain a sense of perspective. If you're going to make... The thing that annoyed me about Far Cry 5 is I was like, great, come on, make a plot about weird religious fundamentalists. Oh, no, you're just wearing the skin of that plot and you're just another Far Cry game. I have nothing that I want to do with you ever again.
Wow, that was a tangent.
So how about
that Zelda?
Yeah, how about Zelda?
I hear he's the boy.
Yeah, he is the boy. The boy with the sword. The sword.
He reminds me of the babe. What babe?
What's
next on the list?
Oh, what is next on the list? Great.
What have we not covered?
Oh, so we've vaguely covered how the game encourages exploration. It's really interesting. How I've played like 40 hours of the game without any music, and I was fine with that.
Oh, speaking of the music, because we've talked a lot about how pretty it is, but there was an incredible... Have you met... There's a bird dude. What are they called?
Yeah, you were asking the wrong person for
it. There's one of those who is like a traveling minstrel guy.
Yes.
And yeah, and he'll hang around playing the accordion, which, I mean, normally, if you actually did that in real life, people would chase you away with rocks. But
hey, I have a very good friend who plays the accordion and people do not chase him away with rocks.
Well, that's very polite of them.
Yes. Please continue after so your personal attack.
You know, the definition of a gentleman is somebody who knows how to play an accordion but chooses not to. Anyway.
Oh, sick of it.
Or banjo. Put in whatever instrument you don't like there. Anyway, bagpipes.
A guitar at a party.
But yes, so there's this particular bird dude who hangs around in the camps. And really? Other places as well. You run into him all
I'm at the top of a tower, which totally makes sense because he's a bird person.
There's this really wonderful bit of sound design where you'll be out in the wilderness and you'll have the wilderness music playing.
Yeah.
When you get close to a place where he is, the music he's playing on the accordion is the same music in perfectly synchronized. And so as you get close to him, this soft sort of wilderness music bleeds into this accordion music. And it's just, it's a really lovely bit of sound design. Like, you always know when he's around because, like, the music that you're listening to, it's the same tune, but it slowly fades into this version being played on the accordion. And then you walk away and it fades back to, the same music again, but, you know, the soft wilderness version rather than the accordion version. And it's really lovely.
There are actually articles and articles about how the sound design in this game works and how they kind of took classic songs and they redid them, but solely on, like, this piano kind of soundtrack for most of it.
There's a little bit too much piano splinkle. Splinkle's a word now, by the way.
Yeah, splinkle.
There's a lot of splinkle. There's a lot of bling, bling. And you just sort of go, Yeah, get back to that cool accordion stuff. I was enjoying that.
And me, that is classic Zelda, that kind of noise. Like, no, John, you're thinking of all the non-piano sound noises. Da-da-da! That's not a piano sound noise. What am I thinking of? Anyway.
Yeah.
I agree with what you said. Because I played a lot of it without the sound, because I played on the train to and from work is my favorite thing to do while I'm commuting.
I just found I couldn't really play it silently. Like, anything I play on my iPad or my phone, I tend to play silently.
Yeah.
But I found I was missing too much in Zelda.
And that's kind of where I'm at now. I've played a lot of it silently, but then I've played it at home here with the music as loud as I can have it, and it is really engaging.
Yeah, and there's just little things like, hey, by the way, there's a monster you haven't seen that's about to murder you.
Cool.
And if you don't have the music on, you don't know.
Yep.
And you'll suddenly get hit from behind.
Oh, I get hit from behind. I guess that explains why I get hit from behind a lot.
Yeah. Okay, I do have one other complaint.
Okay, we've spaced them out.
Which actually, this actually is part of it ties into the exploration.
Yeah.
And it actually makes the exploration harder, which annoys me.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, apart from the fact that it's really goddamn ugly, the energy bar is just too small at the start of the game. It's actually, listeners, you can't see me, but I'm not exactly at peak physical fitness. If I can run longer than the hero of your game... The hero of your game cannot run long enough.
He's been asleep for 100 years. He might be a little bit winded.
He needs to limber up a little, maybe.
That's why you've got to take some time. He's got to find some magical orbs.
100 years in the cave because you're such a crick in the neck.
I can't disagree with you because that's true. When I first played it, I'd find these wonderful pillars with treasure chests on the top, and I would probably spend far too much time climbing them or creating stamina replenishment items and then wasting them to climb a pillar. And
there's usually good loot at the top of those, though.
Admittedly, it is, but I feel like that's a really hard thing to balance. Mm. It's like the weapons breaking. Right?
That's not hard to balance. It's just once you get the second dial, that's perfect. That's actually a good amount, and all the third dial that you get is gravy.
Yeah.
And it knocks onto everything. Like, you can't climb enough. You can't run long enough. You can't glide long enough. And you just run out of stamina so quickly. It's just one of those little usability. It was like, I really want to explore this world, and you are making it hard.
I was surprised about the running, though. I kind of get a little annoyed when the stamina does the running, because sometimes you just want to run in a straight line to get somewhere. I don't want to...
You can, and for 10 seconds.
Yeah, and then you have to take a breather as Link kind of bends over. I love that animation so much. I'm like, yeah, I made you winded. I'm annoyed at you. Run longer.
It's stuffy, little fucker.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. I've gotten the second ring of stamina, and I'm like, perfect. There's almost never a situation where I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have climbed this. Except when it rains, and then the game is... aggressively telling you not to climb things.
Yeah.
It's going, no, it's wet. Yeah, Go away.
The game goes, hey, were you having fun playing me? You're going to have to wait until it stops raining so that you can start playing me again.
Yeah, it is a bit of a weird one because I never stopped climbing. I would just climb worse.
Very, very badly.
Yeah.
Very, very bad. Like, if it made it a little harder, or, you know, if you'd occasionally slip.
Yeah.
But
you slip almost constantly.
Yeah.
It's pretty frustrating.
But it sits at that point where you feel like, and you sometimes can still climb things, and so you will just keep trying endlessly. And I might just turn off the game or go to sleep or have a break anytime it rains.
There is a shrine, you may have encountered it, where you have to collect some balls and put them in the right slots.
Mm-hmm. It's a bingo shrine. That, it's all the old ladies there.
That's right. Leg Sullivan, two fat ladies. But there's like a curse and it's a constant thunderstorm there.
Oh.
Yeah, there's some climbing involved in solving the puzzle.
Right.
That was one of those times where I wanted to book a plane ticket just to Japan just so I could find someone and punch them who had worked on the game.
Not to hurt them too badly, but just to be like, here's a bit of annoyance.
Yeah. I just want to inconvenience you a little. I want to inconvenience your face.
Rather than punching someone, I would recommend the time-honored tradition of slapping a phone out of someone's hand. It is a slightly less violent way of annoying somebody while still clearly demonstrating that you're frustrated with them. Just a slap, crunch, leave.
Okay, nice bit of silence to cut this out in case we don't want it. This is just a total aside. I've been playing Watch Dogs 2.
Okay.
About a year after it came out, and I really should have played it earlier because, oh my God, that game is good. Anyway.
Yeah. No, this is what the whole show's about. It's playing games we should have played. That's
yeah. I got onto it, and it's so funny because it wasn't as topical when it came out as it is now.
Yeah.
Oh. It is now the perfect game for the Trump era. It's amazing.
That game is just going to keep becoming more and more topical.
It's so topical. But anyway. There's one little bit about it, like quite a lot in the game. Like you can jump into the water and like explore bits, and sometimes you have to swim around to find stuff. Every time I did it, it's like Marcus, no, you've got a phone and a laptop. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like that thing where like you watch old movies from the 80s, and like somebody gets pushed into a swimming pool, and it's funny. And like, and as people who always have electronics in our pockets, we just go, don't do that. Yeah, no, don't push someone in the pool.
The idea
of, you're going to cost them $2,000.
The idea of pushing someone into a pool, that feels like it should be assault, right? It's like, listen, mate, we're going to go to court now because that's thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you're going to buy me a new phone. Phone and a new tablet and my Switch, because that in my pocket as well.
Because it fits so snugly in your pocket.
I have very large pockets.
My pockets, I don't know what's with my pants. I do buy the largest sizes that commercial shops sell, which is always nice when I walk in there and go, can I have the largest pair of pants you have, please? And they go, oh, I don't think you need them. And I look at them and go, I do. Also, rolling upstairs. That's my favorite thing in video games. You can just roll upstairs, right? Have you ever tried to roll just on the floor, right? That's not a naturally comfortable thing. And rolling upstairs, this is jagged edges. I just want to see a video game character roll up a stair, just go, ah, game over.
One of the things I do love about Breath of the Wild, like I have my issues with it, but there are things I genuinely love about it.
Yep.
I do love that there's a lot of stuff in it which is completely pointless, but really quite a lot of fun.
Hmm.
Like, have you done any shield surfing?
Oh, yeah. It's just a joy.
It really doesn't serve any function in the game. Like, I thought maybe they'd end up being some sort of boss fight where you have to shield surf for the boss fight or something like that. But no, it's just a fun thing to do.
Have you met the group of people that shield surf? It's just a bunch of shield surfers. That's it. They just surf shields. It's like,
do they say like cowabunga and stuff like that?
They should. But unfortunately, I think the game was written in a country that doesn't understand cowabunga.
I just love that. I used a Lazalfa shield, which has the big spikes on the sides. And the instructor actually said, oh, you get extra style points for using one of those because they're really cool. And I was that's completely pointless. It serves no function in the game, but I'm glad you put that in.
I feel like they put it in for the parts where you're in the Gerudo Desert and you're on the sand seals, which is, now that I think about it,
they're clearly walruses. Walruses with mohawks.
Yeah, they do look very badass. These punk as hell walruses that you ride around the desert. And I feel like someone was like, oh, in the desert, we'll have you surf on your shield. Cool, right? Because it's sand. And
punk seals singing, I am a pinniped. I haven't thought of a rhyme for that, so.
That's cool. It was way clever than anything I could say.
I might be a seal, but I live in the desert.
I will seal you up forever. I don't know. That was the best I got.
I want to be a punk seal. Now. A little bit of Sex Pistols there, sorry. Seal Pistols.
No, that's fine. I'm just failing to think of rock ballad chords. I feel like someone was like, oh, we'll put the shield surf in there. And then they're like, hey, can we just put this everywhere? And they're like, the answer is yes. Does it serve a purpose? It's kind of cool. That's good enough.
Let's have some races.
Yeah. Oh, wait, where there's actually shield races? Oh, I haven't found them yet.
Yeah, there are time trials and stuff.
This is that thing for me that I keep coming back to. A lot of people talked about Skyrim being a game where they could spend hundreds and thousands of hours exploring.
500 hours.
Oh.
I am not joking.
Really?
And I never finished it.
Oh, wow. See, for me, Fallout New Vegas was that. I spent over 200 hours on PC and then 200 hours on PS3 playing Fallout New Vegas just endlessly, like a madman. I played like 5 hours of Skyrim in total, and it's like 3 starts where I get to the first village and then stop playing. I don't know what it is about Skyrim. It just doesn't interface with me.
That was me with The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
I'm currently playing Witcher 3, and I bounced off that 3 or 4 times. I don't know. This game now, it's either the 4th or 5th time I attempted to start it. Yeah. And I'm now about 80 hours in. So clearly it worked this time.
Yeah. A running joke with in Mass Effect 1 was the fact that I did the Citadel 6 times and never finished.
That's the normal way to play it.
Yep, yep.
What you do, the way you play Mass Effect 1
yep.
is you start it, you go, this is kind of cool.
Yep.
Then you get to the Citadel, then you stop playing.
Yep.
And then a year later,
yep.
you come back and try again
yeah.
and you get bored in the Citadel and you stop playing. And different people will vary,
yep.
but it's between 3 and 4 years before you finally actually, you know, get past the Citadel and go, oh, this is actually quite good.
Yeah, but then you stop playing again because you got to the moon, but that was about it. And then 2 or 3 years later, your friend asks you if you want to start a podcast and you go, yeah, sure, but we've got to play Mass Effect because I've never finished it. And then it is now and I'm recording this podcast with you, which is the only way I can finish Mass Effect.
Okay, I may be exaggerating slightly. I think I finally finished Mass Effect 1 on the 2nd try.
No, for me, it was genuinely 6. That's not even a joke.
Yeah.
Like, 3 times on console, 3 times on PC.
Yeah.
Because
that Citadel bit is...
You're describing Mass Effect 1 for me. It was like, this game is fine. I can't wait to 2. And guess what, everyone? I was really happy with that. Wow, that energy just dropped right there. I was just like, yeah.
Yeah, 2's great.
Yeah. If you want to know what I think about 2, and in fact, Mass Effect 3, please listen to a previous episode of the Slowpoke Podcast.
Yes, I'm very much into The Witcher at the moment. And it's funny because in a lot of ways, The Witcher and Breath of the Wild are kind of the same game.
They're
the same game with different aesthetics.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And I mean, you do brew monster potions now that I think about it in Breath of the Wild. You
make shit out of monster bits. And
yeah. And then all the peasants are just like idiots that walk around the world and don't do much.
I don't think Geralt actually carries any live creatures in his pockets, unfortunately. So he's clearly not quite as badass as Link.
Yeah. Well, that's because Link is the silent psychopath that saves the world. Geralt's too busy trying to woo women. Link is like, Zelda is number one girl.
It's not that he's mute, he just has nothing to say.
He says it all with his eyes.
He's just focused.
You can tell when he, like, remembers something, his eyes open and everyone just watches him like, are you having a flashback now?
Are you remembering something or are you just having a stroke?
I can't tell. You got so many swords strapped to you. I don't want to. I'm just going to wait.
It's like, oh, you got so many swords strapped to you. Oh, no, don't worry, one of them broke.
Yep.
You bumped into a doorframe walking into a house and the sword broke. I'm just imagining, though, Link is, like, talking to a blacksmith. And he's like, oh, can
I believe in a lot of things. I believe in giant camels. I will not believe that Link ever talks.
It's like, yeah, so I'd like to buy a sword. And the blacksmith goes, oh, yeah, this is one of the best swords we have. This one will break after 5 hits. And Link's just like, that's ridiculous. I'm not buying that sword off you. That's a piece of garbage. Why the hell would I do that? And he goes, okay, fine. Well, I don't do this for everybody, but here's one of our very special swords. You can use this one 12 times before it breaks. And Link goes, sold!
Like... It's so true, though.
It's like, imagine cars. It's like, oh, I've had this car for a week now. I've driven it 10 times and it just fell apart in my driveway.
I got this thing where I'll find a weapon that I love using and I just want to use it exclusively. And for me, it's the boomerang swords because I just love throwing those boomerangs, those sweet, sweet boomerangs. I will murder all the lizard people in the world to have an endless supply of boomerangs.
And there's actual evil laughter going on behind those big blue eyes. Just like, I'm killing you with your own weapons.
Yeah. Good times.
I'm going to make a potion out of your guts.
That's weird. Don't really question the fact that I'm there death staring a lizard person as they drink a potion made from him. And I'm just like, Link's just there mutely gesturing his eyes. I'm looking at you. And
there's Lazalfa's tail in this. There's Lazalfa's tail in this potion. I'm drinking it right now. Yum, yum,
I'm going to be energy resistant so you can't electrocute me. And I'm going to stab you. Link is weird.
And the lizards are just like, dude, you were fucked up. No, I'm going home. No, but no, I'm not fighting you now.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to being covered in sand so you can't see me.
But I always see you, dumb lizard.
You know, I've basically covered everything on my notes that I think is super important. I think Zelda is, Zelda Breath of the Wild is a really beautiful game. I think it's a game that you can play, anyone can play, and they'll have a time with it. Like, whereas I feel like a lot of open world games, like, it has to work for you or it doesn't. I feel like Breath of the Wild has this wonderful breath to it that anyone can find something there. If you want to just go do all the strength shrines, you just do the strength shrines. If you want to do the story, you can do the story. If you want to go find every Korok seed because you're mad, you can. And you can pick up every rock on every road and throw it down a hill.
Did you do that thing where it's like, okay, I'm found the shrine, I'm going to the shrine, and as you're going down the lift, you're just saying to yourself, not a test of strength. Please, not a test of strength. I don't have the weapons for that. Oh, God damn it, it's a test of strength.
I hate to be contrarian, but no, I'm always like, yes, a test of strength. I get to fight a giant robot. That's fine. I love fighting giant robots. At least it's not a physics puzzle.
Oh, but come on, physics puzzles.
That was great with when Half-Life 2 introduced the gravity gun, and I was like that. And then it was mastered in a game called, it was Singularity, which was a PS3 game.
I never played that.
Yeah, it had weird time travel. It's a really good game. No one else played it either. I think the studio went bust. But see, this is the thing, right? If you don't want to do that test of strength shrine, you just fucking leave. It's fine.
Yeah, you don't need to increase your stamina or increase your health. You don't need an extra heart vessel. Just skip it. Just skip it. It'll be fine. Skip it.
I'm only like a third of the way through the game and I've got just enough. Like I've done the stamina wheel and every one I just add to hearts and.
Yeah, you haven't met silver monsters yet.
I know. I haven't met any of that.
You think the black ones are tough? Wait till you meet the silver ones.
Yeah, I haven't met them. I don't know how that difficulty that, because like, I actually do feel like sometimes I get swatted like a fly far too easily. And now that you mention it, I really don't want to go back to the weapon upgrade place. I never really thought about why.
I'm sorry I ruined the fairies for you.
Oh, it was kind of unspoken, but it was really weird. And all that kind of stuff is all throughout the game. But I'm still glad I got a Switch to just play Zelda. And although I've borrowed David's copy of Zelda to play it for this podcast, I'm probably going to get it and I'll just be fine with Zelda for a little while until Dark Souls 1 comes out on the Switch and then I can play a real game. That's a terrible joke. But anyway, yeah, I was really happy to play it. And I did get what people were talking about when they're saying, oh, it's the best game ever. And I'm like, oh, you know, that might be really important for you because you're a video games journalist and you play every game that has to come out. And so you get sad when they're all Call of Duty.
I missed what you said just then. I misheard it. And I thought you said, play all the video games and they're all Call of Duty. And yeah, I don't think I've encountered a game called Judy.
Hey, you got Judy 1, Judge Judy. You got Judy 2, Judge Judy's cousin, Judge Dredd.
And Judy Robinson from Lost in Space.
Yeah.
There's something I want to talk about, and I'm going to do this spoiler-free.
Cool.
I'm going to talk about the ending. See, here's the funny thing. This is just one of those things where it's like one of the pitfalls of the open world game. It's like, okay, so how hard do we make this? Because you might turn up here 5 minutes after you started the game, or you might come here, you know, after 200 hours having maxed out everything. It turns out, if done all four of the Divine Beasts,
yep,
and you go and kill Ganon,
yep,
he's really ridiculously easy.
Oops.
Yeah, and this is a thing. I've done a bit of reading. It's like a lot of people have observed this. It's like,
wow.
It's like if you've done the whole open world thing, basically, and like if you've played the game as it was designed to be played, and you've actually done the whole open world thing, it might be the single easiest boss fight I've ever done in any video game ever.
Wow. I mean, I gotta be honest, the boss fights I've encountered so far, not the strongest part of the game. They were like interesting puzzles, but once you solved them, it was just doing them. I mean, if you understood the puzzle and you didn't have to Google it like I did with the damn camel. It's like, I don't understand what these metal rods are for.
Oh, yeah, that one was a problem for me.
But, you know, I gotta be honest, I feel like that would have been the case. Like, there's just something about it. I was just like, I'm going to have four of these giant animals and, like, everything, you know?
Because technically speaking, once you get off Tutorial Plateau, because that's what it's officially called now, technically speaking, you can go straight to the castle and fight Ganon.
Definitely.
I suspect if you did that, it would be rather ridiculously hard.
Yeah.
It would be pretty close to impossible.
I'm sure if you pause the podcast now, you could go find a speed run of it that someone's just, like, done it.
But it turns out if you do pretty much the whole game first and then do it, yeah, it's a little bit like pushing an old lady down the stairs. There's not a lot of challenge to it. And it looks so impressive because it's big and impressive. And like, it's a very big boss fight. Ganon is ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's not difficult at all.
You know, I think I might never go fight Ganon. Like, I've kind of accepted this about some games that are like, oh, it's big and it's whatever. And I'll just play it and then I've had enough and that's fine. And
it's so, like my Skyrim experience, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Or me playing New Vegas. You've had enough, even though you've spent so much time there, you just sort of stop. Because every moment for me of playing Zelda Breath of the Wild is just joy, just fun, really. Even though, you know, weapons might break and I might be like, oh, God, I still just find it fun. Just satisfying to play and just and explore and look over hills and look up mountains and climb walls. And I'm sure there'll be a point where that stops happening. And then I'll just go beat Ganon and leave. Done. Right? I can just wrap the game up. And you know what? That sounds better to me than having to go fight an actually hard boss and actually struggle with it, especially after I've done all the stuff. I feel like maybe they were like, oh, look, if someone's done everything, let them finish the game.
It's like the opposite of Dark Souls. It's, yeah. It's Light Souls.
Light Souls. Yeah.
It's like, just walk up, give it a hard flick with your finger and it falls over.
Exactly.
It's all good.
Well, I think that's what you could call a rambly conversation about Breath of the Wild, as we previously said.
On brand.
On brand with both myself and the Breath of the Wild. So I'm synergizing everything. I'm very rambly is what I'm trying to say.
That was a very rambly way of saying that you're rambly.
Yeah, it's because I'm rambly, isn't it? Can you hear that just die in the air? That eagle will never fly again. That drone took it right out. So you can find us on iTunes. Just search for the Slowpokes Podcast. You can find our website, which is slowpokespodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at Slowpokescast and at Facebook by just Googling Slowpokes Podcast. I'm not going to give you a URL for Facebook. That's weird.
A spoiler, it begins with facebook.com.
It does. And then some slashes.
And it ends with all of your privacy taken away from you.
That's a challenge for another day. This is weird, because normally at the end of the show, we mention the next game that we're going to play.
The next game I'm going to play is going to be The Witcher 3, because I'm going to go home and continue playing it.
Which is really fun.
I'm in Skellige. It has many islands.
They're all painful
islands. Angry Scottish people.
Actually, that sounds kind of appealing. I like angry Scottish people.
And none of them are dwarves.
Oh,
they're all quite tall.
I find that surprising. I thought Scottish people in video games were only dwarves.
All
no,
dwarves.
We're going to be playing it's a very rich narrative game called Injustice. The DC fighting game, because both David and myself don't play fighting games. And somebody mentioned that this has a vague story that's like a comic book story. And comic book stories are dumb and fun and engaging.
Okay, spoiler.
Oh,
the story in Injustice is actually pretty damn good.
Awesome. I'm actually kind of excited to play
it. There's some really cool parallel universe stuff, and there's like a bad Lex Luthor and a good Lex Luthor. It's awesome.
Comic books do that so well. So that's what I was kind of hoping for.
It's a lot of fun.
I've read like snippets from the wiki page, and I'm like, this is insane. So I am looking forward to that. And also just learning combos in a fighting game. I know that sounds weird, but like I haven't done that since I used to go to the arcade or play games on like the PS1 with my high school friends or get beaten by my sister at Tekken 2 because, God, Sophie, you're so good at Tekken 2. It's disturbing.
Yeah, and the super attacks are great. Injustice is just wonderfully over the top.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to playing that, but I've been John.
And I remain James.
And that has been Breath of the Wild. Oh, it's because it's a breath.
Smooth ending.